Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Break the Cycle. Me, your host, Joshua Smith. I hope everyone is having a wonderful Monday. I know Monday sucks, but here we are. We made it through another weekend, and we're back to the grind. But anyways, we've got a great show for you guys today. Let's start off with some sponsors. Of course, we have TopLobster.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break the Cycle, where you can get this great The Gun Debate Is Over shirt I'm wearing today by using BTC at checkout for a 10% discount. Or you can join the Patreon, subscribe star, or become a member of this here YouTube channel under all of my shows by hitting join and get yourself into a private Discord server where you can get all of his new gear up to 2 weeks prior to it being released at a 30% discount. And of course, we have executive producer of the show, anthemplanning.com, for all your emergency and crisis planning needs. Check them out today. See what they can do for your business, home, or personal life. They're doing a wonderful job that the government has historically sucked at, much cheaper and much more efficiently. Guys, we got a great show for you today. I'm so excited. I'm sorry I got to record this one. I know you guys love the live shows, but my good friend, one of the most legendary rappers in the world, lives in Germany. So we're going to record a little early and put it out at the normal time. But my guest today is the legendary R.A. the Rugged Man. Sir, how are you doing today?
Hey, peace, and thank you, everybody, for allowing me to do the tape thing because it's 7 o'clock at night right now. And I did one of these podcasts where I had to try to use my brain, and I watched it back, you know, because I did it at 1:30, 2 in the morning to try to get on time. Oh, it was 4 in the morning, actually, to get on time, with, you know, to do the live. And I was like, you know what I'm saying, know what I'm saying, you know. They were like, how many times is this guy going to say, you know, because I was fried. My brain was fried. Sure. And I was trying to get just basic words out. And I was like, yo, I'm terrible. Don't ever do that again. So when you were like, let's do it at 1:30, I was like, can we do it taped at 7 or something? You
know, yeah, so, absolutely. I was willing to get up as early as possible to do this, mainly because I don't really need to be smart. It's always about my guests anyways. But
well, even not even just smart. I was literally like, saying you know, like I couldn't speak.
So sure,
I don't even care if I sound smart. I just want to be able to effing speak. Can we curse on the show?
Absolutely. This is not a family show. So you need to, man. Cool. And I would expect nothing less from Ari the Rugged Man. I've listened to your whole catalog. I'm a big fan. You know, it's not like the cleanest rap in the world. You know, it's not like you're slinging the Christian rap.
Yeah.
But let's
once in a while.
Yeah.
Once in a while, I throw some Jesus Christ, Lordy, in there.
Well, and you just had a beautiful song. You just had a beautiful song about being a dad, and you know that one struck a chord with me. Somebody's been listening to you for a long time, as also a parent of 7 children, raising 7 children in my home, and doing the show and working full time. And I was just lucky enough to catch you in Des Moines, Iowa, at a little venue here with my son. It was a blast. He actually told me the next day that it was the best night of his life. He's one of those guys that listens to a lot of the mumble rap, and then he got to see you, and he's like, hey, Dad, how come none of the rappers I listen to sound like this guy? You know, it was pretty cool, man.
Yeah. So, hey, bless you, man. Yeah. Bless your son. Best night of his life. Well, he got a lot more lives, you know, days and to live, so he'll have better nights eventually. But you know, at this point, RA's. But you know what? There's old ass, wrinkly men that be like, "It's the best night of my life." So you know, maybe he won't.
Yeah, I mean, you're a hero to him now. And when you signed his little hat, he wore it to school the next day. He had to show everybody. He was super stoked, man. It was a good night for me too to see him that happy. You know, we adopted him back in October, and so he didn't have a lot of really good times before we got him. So
yeah, he's telling me, and you're a superhero. 7 kids. My dad had 6 kids, and I'm just like, how did he do it? I have 2, and I don't even know how I did that. So there's people having 6, 7 kids. Yeah. Those are all superheroes to me.
It's hard, man. It's every day is a challenge, but it's a house full of love, man. So we like it. But
yeah, that's what my father always said. He said, it's a house full of love. 'Cause you know, we had the sick kids in our family. So, you know, he said, hey, God put them in the right place, a house full of love. And it is what it is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that actually brings me to a point I want to bring up with you. I mean, we can get into a bunch of stuff. You've been around the scene since the 90s, man, a long time. You've done it all. You've been on songs with Biggie Smalls. But one song that always sticks out to me and is always going to stick out to me is Uncommon Valor. I'm a big fan of Jedi Mind Tricks as well. Vinny Paz, I mean, is amazing as well. And so you did this song, and I didn't ever realize at the time that, you know, this was like you basically singing from the perspective of your father, who was in Vietnam, right? And so when I saw you in Des Moines, I listened to you do this song, and I know you were having some DJ issues and some sound issues, man. It was rough, but you did that song part of it with like no music, and I just got to hear the vocals, and it was beautiful. But can you give me the story about your dad and Vietnam?
Yeah,
and all
but,
that
but to bring that back, I actually do second half of that a cappella, even if I'm not having technical.
Okay.
You know.
All right.
So it's a 44 bar verse. So, you know, you're rocking to the beat and you're rocking to the beat and you're rocking to the beat. So in the middle, I cut it off and, you know, get a little more emotional and just rock to it. Like, you know, and tell a story, like trying to do some, you know, like a live Broadway play type of thing, you know.
Sure. So
my beard looks all fucked up today. I tried to cut it with a scissor, you know, because I knew I wasn't going anywhere. And you're like, you're doing the podcast. I'm like, I just cut my beard all in fucked up places with a fucked up scissor.
You have no idea how many times I've done the show with like a beard just all bushed out of my face and all jacked up, man. So you're good. I don't think anybody's gonna care.
Patches hanging in. Well, it's all good. I don't care. Making a joke because I just went full screen for a second. I'm like, yo, my beard looks fucked up.
I love it, man. I love it. It's cool. So give me the little story on the backstory on your dad. I know you have some political leanings, you know, like probably closer to what I feel. I'm very untrusting of the government. I think the wars need to end. I'm one of those people too. But you have a serious like personal reasons as to why you feel the way you do. And can you give us a little bit of, you told us some of the story of the show.
Yeah, they you know, my father was a kid, 17 years old. They joined the army, teach him how to be a killer. And they ship him over there, fly him over there, give him 4,000 bullets a minute, give him $1 million of ammunition. You know, he shot $1 million of bullets, you know, himself, one man, you know, more than that. And, you know, so he was taking lives, man. He would go under enemy territory and try to bring the troops out that were like captured, or if there was like some kind of crash or something, or, you know, he just had to rescue and bring men out. He had to bring the men out from enemy territory, and going into those territories, you know, they were spraying the chemical Agent Orange, and 6 different missions he was on were documented Agent Orange, but there was way more than that. But those are 6 that the government admitted to. So then the kids, his children were born severely handicapped. Some of them, you know, my sister died, my brother died, his grandson, my nephew died. And when they were alive, they didn't have the best life because, the chemical destroys your DNA.
Sure.
My sister couldn't walk or talk. My brother couldn't walk or talk, and he was blind. And, you know, my nephew only lived to 6 months old. You know, my sister lived to 26 years old. She was supposed to die like 7 days old, but she lived, but she couldn't walk or talk. But she was happy and laughed all the time, and we loved her, and she knew, you know, she was like one of us, you know. She was like, and my brother Max, he lived it tough because he was blind too. He couldn't walk, talk, and he was blind. So, and he died at 10 years old. And that's because the government poisoned its own soldiers and poisoned the people of Vietnam and poisoned the waters. And what Agent Orange did. It was meant to kill the foliage. So,
right.
You know, to make the fighting odds even. So they couldn't hide in the trees. They couldn't hide in the bushes. We could see everything. And the land was flat, and, you know, and poison the water and kill the fish. But they, you know, it was untested. So, or maybe it was tested. I don't know. But whatever it was, it destroyed people's DNA, you know, and killed their kids, killed their grandkids. I don't know if any great grandchildren have been killed by Agent Orange because it was only in the early 70s, but could have been late 60s too, but I think early 70s. Late 60s too. Look that up yourself. Don't mark me as the expert of what year, what happened. But my dad came home in 71, you know. So yeah, you know, they always say, you know, Assad, you know, chemical kills his own people, and that's why we should go to war with Assad, and we're the good guys going to save everybody from these, you know, but our government kills its own people with chemicals, and that was just, I'm just an eyewitness to that, you know.
Sure.
How much more they've done and how many more they have killed, and how much shady, disgusting horrible things they've done to its own people and people all over the world. And then we're supposed to trust them. Like, they're the good guys. Let's trust them. They want to help us and save us. They don't want to help us or save us. They do whatever benefits themselves. We know that. I mean, it's like, I mean, I don't understand this new world of people. Trust the government. Trust them. They will help us. Like, I thought we'd slowly learn that. You know, I can understand in the 50s or like after World War II, like, oh, we saved the world. And, you know, all that propaganda, like, we must trust. We are all American, you know. But, like, you figure through the 60s and 70s with all the protests and all this thing, all these conspiracies being exposed to be true and all this horrible stuff coming about all these agencies, you figure people would learn from it, but nobody does. Right. They go, oh yeah, trust them again, trust them again, trust them. They're not like that anymore, trust them again. It's like, and we just keep falling for it. We don't, but you know, the majority do. And if you don't believe in them or agree with them, you're the bad guy, you know? So
right, yeah, they start marking you as
these atrocities.
Yeah, they start marking you as this evil, seditious, like terrible person if you don't go along with the approved narrative, that's for sure. But you, so we're going through something, you know, not similar to the Vietnam War, but similar with, it's, you know, we have a large portion, especially of the American government or American population, telling us all to support the government, support everything they're doing, listen to all the science, all this stuff. But you just came off tour, man. And I gotta think that it was kind of rough with all the logistics and traveling and stuff. Did you have any logistical issues getting over here and doing your tour and all that stuff during these crazy times?
No, I don't have any issues because I'm an American citizen and I'm a German resident. So I'm allowed in my own country, allowed in America, and my kids live in Germany, so they can't keep their kids from, you know, they can't keep their father from their kids. I mean, they can, but they're a little bit more decent than that. You know, when I had a lot of problems was trying to get back and forth to the UK for a show, there was like flight issues and government documents that I thought was fine, and then they had me missing flight, wouldn't let me on a flight, then I had to get on the next flight. There was some definitely issues, but you know, everything went smooth. In the US, I did, I think, close to 50 shows in the last, you know, 4 or 5 months. Before that, there was nothing going on for me. Like, for, you know, since April 2020, I was supposed to have all these tours for my new album, and everything got postponed, canceled, and tours all over the world. So, you know, like all artists, I was really fucked over. Sure. And had to figure out, where's the next real money coming from? Because touring is the money, you know? And, or if you, the other way to get money is if you constantly put out material, you know, and flood the market. Okay, and here's 10 songs. You could do that too, but I kind of like to make my songs mean something when they come out and make a statement, and you know, like not just put out me rapping really great over 10 beats. Here you go. Like I kind of want to make like a little bit artsy fartsy, man. Like people right. Don't look at me like that, but I'm a little bit so I could put out constant projects, 3 projects a year, and I can make a great living doing it. I kind of like making a project that I go, you know, tour and make a great show. I come from the era of live showmanship. Sure. That's really what, before I was ever making a record, I was, you know, rocking house parties. And that's my life, is rocking stages. It's not really, you know, being an internet rapper and selling my stuff online. That was never really my thing. But, you know, when the world changes, sometimes you got like, if shows shut down again, you know, I'm going to have to figure out a way to adapt,
right.
You know?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, man. I know a lot of artists went and started doing like live shows online, which was pretty crazy. I got to watch you know, you may not be a fan of Post Malone, but he did a whole set with a full band live show, and he did all Nirvana songs. It was wild, dude. Like super wild. But let's talk about that, the newest album that you put out in 2020, the All My Heroes Are Dead, right? Is that it's got, you know, so you're kind of self-deprecating on it. You're definitely bringing up like newer stuff, like the song about your child, and you got the Golden Oldies on there, which is, I love Slug too. I think that was a great song, man. And being a guy like almost 40 like me, I'm like, oh yeah, lemonade was a popular drink, and it still is, you know what I mean? So but let's talk about the new album.
Rest in peace, Guru.
Yeah. You took a lot of inspiration from, you know, you getting older and growing older and being a father and stuff like that. But what does this album mean to you, man? Can you tell me?
Well, All My Heroes Are Dead was the one before Legends Never Die was my father had passed, and it was kind of like a memorial to those who have passed on. And it was also some Legends Never Die, because my album before that was Die Rugged Man Die. So it was like, I ain't dying, motherfucker. So it was like braggadocious, but it was a homage to, you know, the loved ones in my life, you know. And then this one was called, I don't know, just The World Changed On Us, you know. And oh shit, yeah. Let me try to plug that back in. The World Changed On Us. And I probably should have kept it off. Ugly today, can be a little dark, you know. I'm just kidding, but yeah, so the world, you know, it changed. It's not, you know, hip hop, the era I come from, where being the best matters, and rocking the stage, and crowd participation, and house parties, and gold rope chains, and cassette tapes. It's a different era, true. You know. And we lost so many of the great, so many of the greatest that ever lived. So all, you know, so many of the greats. So, you know, and scratches aren't in records anymore, and beatboxing isn't in records anymore. You know, maybe they are, but a super, super small percent, you know? So, and boom bap isn't, you know, as heavily praised. So I wanted to kind of do golden era stuff, but put it on steroids. Like, look, you know, all my heroes are dead. So I'm going to put it on my back and ride with it, and give you what I love, you know, like 1988 on ultra steroids, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's a great album. It's the one that my son listens to all the time. You know, I try to get him into some of the older stuff slowly. You know what I mean? Like I'll take it all the way back to Night of the Bloody Apes. You know, but he's got to start with some of the newer stuff first.
Yeah. Well, the newer stuff is better. It's more informative. The old stuff was shock value when I was a teenager. I wanted to just upset the which I'm down with still, you know, but I'd write a list of horrible acts and terrible things and write about it like a movie, you know. And you know, you're a teenager and your way to rebel was to fuck the world, fuck them, you know. Now you could rebel with a strong information, you know, and you could still say fuck the world and them over the head, but you could do it just a little bit more intelligently, you know. So, and I'm not saying you got to be intelligent with your music. I love ignorant rap just as much, you know, like that shoot 'em up, gun buck. I love all of that shit too. You don't got to be, I'm a college professor, fuck all of that too, you know, but I'm proud of this new record the most, you know.
Yeah, it's a good record, man. Absolutely. I think you've grown a lot, and you talk a lot of in the new record and in some of your newer interviews about, you know, you used to have this mental health crisis basically, and now you've kind of grown, and I think it's really cool to see the change, you know what I mean. I think it's good for your fans for sure. But you talk a lot about how you used to be a dirtbag and stuff.
Well, yeah, you know, Long Island out there, they were freaking crazy, everybody. And you go back as an adult and your friends are still on drugs and cracked out and fucking heroin, and the ones that aren't on drugs, you go to a restaurant or a bar and they're trying to fight people, and you're like, come on, man, we're getting a little bit old for this shit, you know. Yeah. But no. But yeah, the mental issues, they're still there, you know. There's times when I'm not right and I'm trying to get right, you know, but that's the difference. Back then I would react, I'd fight, I'd break shit, I'd go crazy when I was a teenager, you know, early 20s. But now as a grown up, you know, learn how to behave yourself and try to figure it out in your head before you go crazy, right. You know, try to keep it cool, you know.
Well, I watched a recent interview with you, and you talked a little bit about the passing of Biz Markie at your show in Des Moines, which I thought was great. I was a big fan when I was a kid. I watched a recent interview where the interviewer like challenged you on Biz Markie being one of the greatest performers, you know, in the hip hop industry, and you were like, nah, man, you got to see him live. And so I know to you especially because I've seen you live now, and your live show. I mean, you put a lot of stock into your stage presence, man. Like it's killer. You're one of the most fun artists to watch live. You're definitely big on like crowd participation. But I mean, where do you take a lot of that that inspiration for your live shows from, man?
Well, like you just said, Biz Markie, Big Daddy Kane. You know, watching old clips of even Kumo D, and it's like KRS-One. there was a VHS tape of KRS-One Live, and it was like these guys, Dougie Fresh, oh, Greg Nice, Nice and Smooth. These guys were just such tremendous performers. And that's what hip hop was about, performing and going to the parks. I don't know. Hip hop isn't just going in a vocal booth by yourself with your engineer and just rapping. Hey, I made a song. That's rapping, you know? Hi, kids. Do you like
violence? Are you sick to death of pussyfooting around the truth while being constantly fed lies by news and big tech tyrants? If so, then come join me, Dan Smotz, on The System Is Down, where we get weird, have fun, and dig into all the dangerous taboo topics like conspiracies, politics, religion, culture, current events, and everything your family just prays you don't bring up around the Thanksgiving dinner table. And I know that reality is scary to some people, so if you're easily offended, just ignore this and go back to making cat memes or whatever. But if you're ready to change the world for the better, come join me on The System Is Down at tsidpod.com or wherever you get podcasts. That's tsidpod.com, because the system is down and truth is taking over.
But hip-hop is the elements of the whole spectrum of it, you know, and that's where I got it from. And the Juice Crew, the whole Juice Crew, they were my idols, you know. I wanted to be Biz. I wanted to be Kane. I wanted to be Kool G Rap, Master Ace. I wanted to be those guys. I wanted to have Marley Marl and be my producer and Roxanne Shanté in my corner and all of that stuff. Those were my idols. So, yeah, I came from that era, you know, when I came studying that era.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It was a good era for him. I mean, this is the best. It's the golden oldies.
Not even just hip-hop. If you go back to, if you see OG R&B acts like Charlie Wilson from the Gap Band, or just any of these OGs that were around in the 70s, 80s, or even if you go to a super old school show, 60s, you know, they put on tremendous shows, because it wasn't about, you could just fake it on the internet and people think you're a great entertainer, sure. You know? You couldn't just record it and film it and pretend and cut angles and, hey, look, my video's great and I'm a great performer. Like, you really had to go on a stage and show and prove. And that's what entertainers did, from every genre, from rock and roll to, you really, that's how people got record deals, by being tremendously great performers. So I think that spirit, you know, stayed with the OGs. Like, you go see any of them and their body, I'll go see, like, say I play a festival and I see like a new school MC that has a tremendous following and everybody loves them. And then you see like an OG performer, like I don't want to say Kane again, because I would say Pharoah Monch, you know? And it's just night and day, like, holy shit, Pharoah Monch is, look at the way he could rock a crowd and his breath control and the way he rocks the microphone. And then the new kid with Buzz, you know, people know the beat when it comes on, know the song, but it's like night and day who's the better performer. It's not even close who's the better MC, you know? Yeah. But, you know, so-and-so has the hype because of the
the following online, man. You know, it's all about the following online these days, bro. Yeah. That backpack rap, yeah. and then that's where we headed after that, so.
And this era, you don't even need a song. You could be just, you know, a Kardashian, or, you know, whoever, that, you know, just be a face and make noise. And
right.
And you get that following.
Yeah. Some of these guys rapping today aren't even, I swear some of them aren't even putting out words, man. You know what I mean? It's crazy, dude. It's crazy to me. Like, cause you listen to lyrical, and then you got people, young people like Afro out there who came on tour with you, who's fantastic, great performer, amazing lyricist. I just absolutely amazing. Can you tell me a little bit about how that friendship started, man? That's a pretty cool story.
Well, I had a contest on a computer, you know, on the computer. I'm an old man with that. I had a contest on the internet, and he just bodied it. He destroyed everybody. He was incredible. So, you know, I flew out and met him and said, yo, you're an incredible kid. You know, he had, like, his voice. The thing I hate about new school rap is these terrible voices. Everybody, wah, 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 you know, and it's like, oh, God, wah, 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 you know. I can't deal with that. So when he comes in with the bass, you know, it just sounded like golden era. It sounded like, wow, that's when your voice hit the microphone. You'd be like, damn, you know, like, so he could just talk and it sounds like hip hop to me, you know? So.
Yeah. He definitely has one of those voices, man. It's nice and bassy and deep, but he could put them together and he could rap real fast, which was really cool. And like, like clean rap real fast, which is it's just hard to do. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of people out there to do it, but you do it very well as well. But he seemed cool, man. He also came out, hugged my son, took a cool picture with him down on a knee, man. He's a nice guy, dude, for sure. Pretty cool.
Yeah, Fro's a sweetheart. Fro's a real sweetheart.
And he's from Southern California, man. He sounds like he came from the East Coast.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Sometimes, and when he stays in New York for a little bit, he gets a little bit New York accent. He starts talking, go just rock him type of thing. Like, yo, you talking like rock him again? But then when he goes back to, because rock him in Long Island, you know. And then when he goes back to Cali, I'm like, you've been hanging out in Cali too long. We got to get you back to New York.
Start saying bro and hella and stuff again. Yeah. I'm from Oakland, man.
Starts talking like Deborah Foreman in Valley Girl.
Exactly, exactly. I'm from Oakland, right outside of Oakland, California. So I grew up on the West Coast rap. Really, I came to liking hip hop and rap with Tupac, obviously. But I had like Brother Lynch, SIBO, X-Rated. I listened to a bunch of like really dirty like Sacramento rap. But I knew the difference between hip hops as a kid. Different regions, and Biggie was a big part of that for me, for the East Coast rap, obviously, and then got into, you know, lots of other names and you and stuff like that. But who are some of your favorite artists that you worked with on out there?
Wait, but you're talking about Oakland. You had Tony.
Oh sure, yeah, Tony. I had so many. I can name them all day.
Too short was out there too.
RBL yeah. Posse, San Quinn. I mean, this is all the shit that I grew up with for sure, yeah. Man. Like I loved listening to like gangster rap from the Bay Area and Southern California and California. But
my man Locksmith is from the Bay too.
Oh, I have to check. I haven't listened to that one. My brother. So my brother,
you would love Locksmith.
I'll check him out.
You'll love Locksmith.
My brother,
because he's on our shit. You know, he's on that shit. Yeah. He's a knowledgeable brother. Yeah,
my brother actually rapped with RBL Posse. He's a white kid from Antioch, California. Little Irish dude named the Con Man. He goes by the Con Man. His last name's Connors, and he actually used to go into the studio with some guys from RBL Posse, the original YT, Young Thug, and some of those guys, and lay tracks with them, man. Which I always thought was kind of cool. I was hanging out with RBL Posse, you know, at these house parties and shit. But who are some of your favorite artists that you've worked with over the years, man? You've been going since the 90s or even earlier. Who's some of your favorites?
Well, Kool G Rap was one of my biggest idols in life. You know, he's one of my favorite rappers. He's the greatest lyricist in music history to me. And, say it all the time, he would body all these... You know, John Lennon and Jim Morrison. Kool G Rap will body everybody. Bob Dylan, it don't matter who it is. But he raps the GOAT, so lyrical. But working with G Rap was such an honor, and it's always an honor. And Killer Priest is an incredibly lyrical, underrated rapper. You know, like when Wu-Tang was really popping in the 90s, he had a rap album, and I think it went gold. If not, it did 400-something thousand. Had a huge album release party and he had his buzz, but now he releases these little small projects that he just, I think he records them at his crib. I don't know, but they have like such extreme high caliber level of visionary poetry, but they don't get heard. But if you want to check out some of Killer Priest's albums, they're just fantastically lyrical, you know? They're a little underproduced, undermixed, you know, sometimes. But they're just tremendous, tremendous, tremendous. So Priest is, and he's a good friend. And Hellraiser, you know, Timbo King, I always liked those guys. I like that. All the Wu affiliates, I always had. For Master Killer is one of my favorite people.
Sure.
Just one of the most, he's original Wu-Tang, but he's so fucking humble and such a good human being. And yeah, so it's always an honor to work with MK. And I mean, there's so many, you know, there's so many. Master Ace was a Juice Crew original. That was such an honor to work with Master Ace, you know, and the song we did great. It was me, Brother Ali, Master Ace. Got, you know, tens of millions of listens all over the world. I think almost like 6 million on YouTube alone for a video we did for a couple thousand dollars, you know. It's like, yeah, so the list goes on and on. I worked with so many of my idols. I worked with like, so many of my idols, it's not even funny, you know. It's like everybody who I looked up to gives me accolades and love, and it's just really been a blessed career that I've had, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah, Master Ace is an absolute legend in the hip-hop scene forever, will always be.
Well, I say it all the time about Ace, he's a superhero, he's a fucking superhero to me. Ace, and I don't know if you'll hear this, but I love you, I love him, man, he's a superhero to me. You know, he has the multiple sclerosis or the MS or whatever, and nobody even knew it. And he just, you know, decade after decade after decade of nonstop, consistently great hip-hop music. And his live show performance is just so sharp and beautifully put together. It's like, damn, it's so precise. And, you know, he was doing that show for close to 99, he got it or whatever. But like, whatever, two decades or more, however many, over two decades.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah, we're fighting MS and nobody knew it.
Yeah.
And he's a superhero because he's the best longevity artist ever in hip hop, I think, with consistency of projects. I think Kool G Rap is better longevity as far as being pound for pound great lyricist dominator. But I think Ace, as far as projects and consistency with music making, and I just think he's such an incredible great, you know. And Ace's show is better than G-Rap, I think, you know, and better than a lot of rappers that might be technically more sharp and, you know, murderous. Ace is just like, just consistently all around rounded master, you know.
Sure.
Master, yeah. Ace.
Yeah, exactly. Master. you know, it's one of those shows that I've not had the luxury of seeing, unfortunately, but maybe someday, I don't know, if we ever open everything back up again, dude. But so you know, now that we're kind of we've talked a lot about the old school, you talk a lot about the old school, it's obviously the golden era of hip-hop, will likely never be matched, but are there some new artists that you like besides Afro, obviously?
You know what, it might be matched again at some point, because you know, the thing is, when something becomes the biggest music on the planet Earth, there's so much corporate funding and there's so much money to be made corporately. So, you know, at some point, you know, there could be this underdwelling. Like, we always have this underground. We have these, like, tremendously great lyricists. They're all over the world, like, every place in the world. So if somebody kind of picks it up, puts it on its back, and we ignore the corporate-funded mediocrity shit that's on the radio, and we don't who they're calling the goats and who they think is the best, and these guys that are so under, so many, like, all my friends rap better and make better music than all the highest caliber mainstream, you know, not high cal, I don't mean high caliber, I mean like, you know, highly hyped artists. All these rappers are, oh, they're the best. I see it on Twitter, I see it on, you know, oh, they're the best. They're all mediocre compared to the guys I rap with. So, you know, I think if there's a underground scene that just comes back, it's a definite possibility that one day we could repeat the golden era, maybe top it even, you know, that's definitely a possibility, you know? But who knows? Who the hell knows? You know, I don't know if we could ever top 88, you know, 1988's the pinnacle, every album, like, bow, 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 one after the other, so many ridiculously incredible albums, you know? But, you know, some people say, because their era was 94, because that's when rap was commercialized. So you had like hip hop albums that were influenced by 88, but they were had massive money pushed behind them. You had like the Illmatic type albums and Biggies, and you know. So some people go there because they're learning about rap through the big corporate machine, because corporate was funding hip hop projects at the time. But 88 was closer to where the street, it was street still, it was in the streets, it was street music, it was, you know, Rakim and Kane and Kool G Rap and KRS and Ultra Magnetic MCs, and it was like Slick Rick, it was like everything was iconic, you know, and it wasn't, you know, it didn't become this big commercial machine for Walt Disney, you know.
Right, so. Right. Speaking of that, have you heard Nas's new album, man?
I haven't, you know, I'm so behind on every album. Listen to everybody's, I heard it was, but I usually listen to everybody's album like a month or two or three afterwards when the hype's gone. I go, okay, let me just put it on now with nobody talking about it or whatever, and let me check it out. And then I'll be like, damn, this shit is crazy. Or I'll go,
Yeah, you so, just never know, man. Especially when people have been putting out albums as long as that. And but I was surprised.
The last Nas album, the King's Disease one, I didn't listen to it at first, and then you know, like a month or two later, I listened to Daughters. No. What was the first single? Oh, not Daughters. It's a super old one. What was the first single of? Oh, Black, when he did the Doja Cat. Pro Black, not Doja Cat.
Yeah. I know the song. I just can't think of that song.
I thought that song was tremendous. Yeah. I was like, wow, this shit is incredible. And then so I listened to the album, and I wasn't blown away by King's Disease. Sure. I kind of was disappointed. But I heard King's Disease 2 is even better than Part 1.
It's way better. Way better. It's hard. Yeah, he went hard, man. He's got a verse with Eminem on there, and it's really a weak, I mean, to me it's a weak verse for Eminem, but he's still just amazing, and it was a great album for sure, man. But
I heard that song because EPMD was on it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
On EPMD's Long Island. Those are some of my heroes too.
EPMD. Yeah, they've been around a long time.
The song's called EPMD.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I made my own EPMD hat. They weren't even blown up yet. And I walked into school with EPMD. You know when you could iron on letters?
Yep.
You know, at the store? So I went to the store and I ironed on EPMD. And I've made one for Stetsasonic, STET. And my boy who was down with EPMD, I walked into school. It was a new school I just started. And he was like, yo, you got EPMD hat? Where'd you get that? I was like, I made it. He was like, what? You're crazy. And so he brought me to the studio, Charlie Murata, where EPMD made all their shit. And, you know, I met Eric. I met all of these guys. And when I was a little kid, teenager, you know, and probably 14, 15. And, you know, they went on to do gold record after gold record after gold record, just being, you know, making some music in Charlie's attic, you know. It was...
Yeah, it's really crazy the parallels between, to me, because I love hip hop and rap, but I grew up listening to punk and hardcore, especially East Coast hardcore, right? And like, it's funny the parallels between the fans of the two, like you had to make your own merch sometimes, you know what I mean? Like you couldn't, there was no internet, so you had to find out about new bands and shit through like these hand-drawn zines and stuff like that. Man, it's crazy, dude. It's really funny to me.
Yeah, that's funny. I forgot where I was going with that. Are you a fan of the Bad Brains?
Oh yeah, dude, absolutely. I grew up listening to like straight up hardcore Bad Brains, Black Flag, MDC, all that shit, man. So sure.
Because Daryl's my close friend. He thinks I'm one of the greatest that ever lived. He hits me up like, yo, you top five, anybody, and I'm like, oh shit, all right. But yeah, Daryl, I met him years back. And I went to Woodstock. We was working together on some stuff. And Daryl's just a beautiful soul. He's a great dude.
They're legends. I mean, absolute legends. Hardcore scene is, I mean, you know, it doesn't get super much more legend.
I heard some wild
legend.
Stories about HR. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Saying HR was wild, you know.
Yeah, insane stuff. That's also another band I never got to see live. I sure wish I would have. I've seen Black Flag, obviously, and my first actual CD that I ever bought myself was Black Flag Damage. So I mean, I was really into hardcore and rap and hip hop at the same time, and then I got into metal like right after that. So I'm a well-rounded musical appreciator for sure, you know. But man, we're getting to the end of this public stream, brother. What do you got coming up next, man? You're thinking about new albums? You thinking about more tours? What are you thinking about?
Well, I made this album to tour off of. You know, that was my main thing, was to get on the road. Hey, even the songs and the choruses were call and response songs. I made them for the audience, you know, to perform live. And we just did some great shows in the UK. Sold out some venues, packed the house, and everybody had the best time ever. And I want to do a lot more sold out shows off of this damn album. And then we're going to see what the next step is, you know? So.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Can you tell all my fans and supporters where they can find you, how they can support you, how they can listen to you, all that great stuff.
Yeah, just, you know, RA the Rugged Man, Google it. And you know, it's Twitter, Instagram. I'm on all the stuff. I got a Snapchat. I don't even know how to use it. Rugged Lives or something. Rugged Man. I don't even know what it is. And TikTok. I don't know how to use that one. You know, it takes me all these years. Facebook, I know how to use that one.
Sure.
The old people know how to use Facebook. Old people learned how to use Twitter. And IG, I learned that, you know, medium old. And not a young shit, I'm trying to learn that, you know. So, because here's the thing is, when you're an independent artist, like if I could, I would just throw my phone in the fucking water and just leave it, never have it again. But the thing is, this is the era. It's like if you're an independent artist and you want the world to hear your music and you want to tour, you have to be on this shit every day.
All the time.
Hit them in the head and communicate. And that's the world we're in. If I want to quit music and quit the entertainment industry, I could, boom, go off the freaking grid, you know?
Sure. Yeah. And we'd all be much happier. I know you're not a big respecter.
Be happier if I'm off the grid, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I would too, man. And you know, I'm doing this show thing and kind of moving over and got my fiance doing a YouTube channel and stuff. So it's like I'm always on these social media apps and you know, cutting and editing and all that stuff, dude.
It's a blessing and a curse, yeah. You know. So I'm not complaining because some of the greatest shit ever I saw through the stuff. And plus, I know it's terrible. And people go, oh, you trust YouTube videos or this and that. But like, you can Google say you want to know something about a rare, obscure filmmaker. Okay, Pete Walker from the UK that made these horror films you love from the 70s.
Right.
Boom, boom, boom. You find an interview right on YouTube. You want to hear, what was Margaret Singer really talking about? You could Google all this stuff. Oh, yeah, she was a eugenicist. Yo, she did do Klan meetings. You know, there's all this information at your fingertips from that spectrum to this spectrum. And I want to watch a rap music video that I saw 35 years ago and haven't seen since. Google, boom, I could see it. So I know the curses of it, but there's also a lot of blessings of it. So.
Sure. Yeah, I agree, man. I definitely agree. It's a double-edged sword. And while I do enjoy the arguments sometimes, it would be nice to just cut everybody off and do my own shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But hey, man, I'm a huge fan, R.A., man. Thank you for all the music you've given us to listen to over the years.
And what's your son's name that I met?
His name is Adric.
Yo, Adric. Fuck those. Oh,
no. No, it's cool. It's okay. It's fine.
Yo, Adric. Adric. Forget those mumbling, non-lyrical dudes. You want people who rap like me and rap like Locksmith and rap like Black Thought. And you want these guys that can rap. You don't want that. You want real rappers.
We need to teach the generation.
Shout out to the young boy. And we're going to do it again. We're going to rock at the show again. You know?
Hey, next time you guys are anywhere in the Midwest, you let me know. R.A., we'll be there. I promise, brother.
Peace, bro.
All right, man. Have a good one. All right, guys. Another awesome episode of Break the Cycle. Please go follow R.A. Listen to his music. If you've never listened to R.A., you're missing out, man. It's lyrical genius stuff, dude. He's amazing. One of my favorite artists. Now one of my 10-year-old son's favorite artists. So we're bringing the old school back. So go check him out, man. Also, definitely subscribe to this channel and hit the bell to be alerted for shows 5 nights a week. Of course, check out the Patreon, Subscribestar, and the channel membership under all of my videos here by hitting join and sign up for like $6 a month. You get all kinds of cool different like perks on different platforms, and plus the private Discord server with like 100 people in it already. A really cool community doing a lot of great stuff. Guys, it's going to be an awesome week of shows, I promise you. I was sick, so I had to reschedule some stuff, move some stuff around. I got another show with Top Lobster this week. I know you guys love Top, so that's going to be a lot of fun. Thursday, the rescheduled show for my good friend Fritz will be on, since I was sick over the week. Over Friday, I didn't get to have him on. Tomorrow, if you guys have listened to my show and have asked, where's that awesome pop punk intro and outro from? My good friend Alex Won, the lead singer of Whiskey Grenade, who sings those songs, will be on the show to talk about all kinds of cool stuff, probably a lot of punk rock and hip hop stuff. On Wednesday, my good friend Randall Daniel will be on the show. He is the chair of the Libertarian Party of Kentucky. So if you've been watching these Libertarian State party social medias and realize that Kentucky has become absolutely based, he's one of the reasons for that. So it's going to be a lot of fun to have that conversation. Guys, I love you to death. Check out my sponsors. Of course, we have toplobster.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break the Cycle, where you can get all kinds of great gear by using BTC at checkout for a 10% discount. And of course, executive producers of the show, AnthemPlanning.com for all your emergency and crisis planning needs. Check them out today. See what they can do for your business, home, or personal life. They're doing a wonderful job that the government has historically sucked at, much cheaper and much more efficiently. Seriously, if you have a business, check them out. Guys, I will see you tomorrow for a show with my good friend, Alex One. It's going to be awesome. Definitely check it out. But until then, don't forget to break the cycle.
Due to legal reasons, I just have to explain. The lyrics of my last song may seem to contain a violent call to action in the verse and refrain. But I just meant it in Minecraft. The helicopter part was in reference to GTA 5 and the things you do. So any violence you commit, I am not an excuse, because I just meant it in Minecraft. But Timber is my friend and he's constantly cold. Accusations of incitement getting totally old. Make your own choices, yeah, you have control, because I just meant it in Minecraft. Obviously, I would never advocate force, unless there's due process and a trial, of course. And if you're convicted, we will make you a corpse in Minecraft, just in Minecraft. You're nothing I mean, you know it. Your product is getting close to COVID. Holy shit, I think I